The Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
State Comptroller Susana Mendoza standing by. I want to play the clip from yesterday's show. This is Illinois Education Secretary Beth Purvis. And Beth Purvis yesterday made the statement that there were Q3 and Q4 payments that the Comptroller's Office could make, but are not making. And then we'll give Mendoza an opportunity to say why that's just flat wrong. First, here's Purvis from yesterday.
The Comptroller has not yet released the Q3 and Q4, what are called mandatory categorical payments. So schools are owed about $850 million from FY17. And so we also call on the Comptroller to release at least those Q3 dollars so that schools have the cash on hand that they need. Again, Q3 and Q4 is $850 million that districts across the state are owed for their mandated categorical payments. A lot of them have burned through their cash reserves. So this cash flow issue is a really big one.
And this is a cash flow that, in a lot of ways, as I understand it, targeted towards some really struggling financially struggling districts, and also some special needs districts as well, or not districts that have a preponderance of special needs kids. At any rate, Susana Mendoza is the state comptroller. I appreciate you coming on. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Now explain to me, because you deal with this at a level we don't, and keep this simple now because we're simple.
Sure.
What are these categorical payments, and why is Purvis wrong in what she said?
So the categorical payments are separate from the general state aid payments, which is what you're hearing a lot of discussion about now with Senate Bill 1. The categorical payments are in a separate pool. They're not considered core mandated payments by either state statute or court orders. So they would fall into the pool that gets in the queue along with all the other bills that are already late. Now, keep in mind, in case you don't know or your audience doesn't know, this is not like we just have a small pile of bills. We have almost $15 billion in bills for services that have already been rendered from schools, from social service providers, you name it, hospitals. And we only have on any given day, you know, a few hundred million dollars in the bank account to try to cover paying back over $15 billion worth of bills. Categoricals fall into that category. And just so folks know, we are up to date on paying bills through, this is going to make you cry, but through the month, we're in the month of October. So if you have been owed money from last October, so 2016, that's as far as we are current. Categoricals, on the other hand, are a little bit more current, because when I took office in December, December, January, February is the absolute worst month for revenue in the state of Illinois. So we were in triage mode every day. But then in the month of April, was the first month that we had any significant amount of revenues coming in, because it was tax month, right? So that was a really great month revenue-wise. And that's when I was able to prioritize getting out the first categorical payment, which is not a small payment. It's a $429 million payment that pretty much goes out at once, because it goes to all the schools in an equal way. And it's not easy to cobble up $429 million to make a payment. For example, just yesterday we woke up with $254 million liquid, but we had a $220 million payment to make towards our debt service. So there's just not enough money in the account. And anybody who understands the most basic rule, which is that you can't write a check that you know is going to bounce, would understand that as much as I would absolutely love to get that categorical funding up for quarter three and quarter four, it's just impossible to do when there's not enough money in the bank account to cash those checks.
Susana, you said the money was in some kind of a queue. First of all, my question, does that make any, or could that be put somewhere where it makes extra interest or makes extra money on itself? And could we use that to pay off the bills? And why would Beth Purvis think that there's extra money in that queue that could be released?
Well, maybe I shouldn't have used the word queue. By queue, I mean a line of people waiting to get paid, not an actual account that has money in it. So no, there is no, it's not like the $429 million are going into a fund. We don't have the $429 million. So for Secretary Purvis to have gone on your show and said that I should release these dollars, it's absolutely disingenuous. She could just go to our website and see how much money we have available on a daily basis, or she could have just called and said, hey, can you release categorical funding? And I would have said, well, I'd love to, Director Purvis, but we don't have the money. So no, we can't do that. Again, it's just this misinformation campaign that is is, you know, par for the course with this administration, and it doesn't help. You know, if they really want to make sure that schools open up on time, then I need the money to be able to pay the schools.
Well, what about, I mean, look, in your position, and I don't envy your position, in your position, you got to get creative every day to try to juggle as much
That's
as you
right.
can to pay what you have to pay. If we know that 85%, approximately 85% is legally mandated bills that we have to pay, that's going to suck up the vast majority.
90%,
the vast majority of the revenue. But is there nothing creatively that you can do, and I mean this in a legal way, juggling the books
sure.
to make these school payments? Is there any money that can be moved? Is there any creative thing that could be done? Anything at all?
Steve, with all due respect, it's not magic, right? Like, there's no.
Well, I'm not asking for magic. I'm just saying. I know that in conversations through the years with Hines and with Judy Barr. And with your predecessor, Leslie Munger, and it's not this number. This is a very big number, but at different times you got to
sure.
juggle and you got to change positions in the line. I'm asking you if there's anything that could be done, and you're telling me no, there's not, right?
Well, I would tell you that I already have done that. So what I started saying was that I prioritized quarter one and quarter two categoricals, which had not been paid by my predecessor. That was over $800 million. And I paid that in April, and then I paid it again in June. In June, I can guarantee you most of the superintendents, if not all of them across the state, had no idea they were going to be getting the June categoricals because they probably saw that as a lost cause. But I made it a priority to get them their money. You didn't hear any fanfare about it. I didn't have a press conference or a press release saying that I'm paying the school categoricals. I wanted to just get these folks their money, knowing that that might be the last month given the revenue projections for the rest of the year. And you heard me probably on my video saying that if we didn't pass a budget in August, we were going to miss debts, we were going to miss pension payments and potentially payrolls, and it would be absolutely devastating for our state.
So, no joke.
We're doing magic every day in the controller's office, but there's only so much we can do. And a $429 million payment, of which we actually have two, is impossible to do when you have $200 million in the bank.
Right. Now, to open the schools on time, the money's got to be there. You know the rumor that's out there. The rumor that's out there is that the Democrats are trying to slow this down to create a crisis right up to the last minute to have some sort of negotiating strength to get this through. Why can't, and the reason I ask you this is because you're part of the political process here and you've been very outspoken about it. Why can't this bill get to the governor's desk to let the governor go ahead with the amendatory veto and then kick it back to the legislators and let the assembly decide what they're going to do with it then? What are they waiting for?
Well, I think they should send it. So I think you and I can agree on that. They should send it. You know, from my perspective, go ahead, put this on the governor, let him make his amendatory veto, or the preferable thing would be for him to sign it and to, frankly, just be honest with the public as to what the bill does. It is not a bailout, as he likes to call it. This is not a bill that should be dividing one part of the state against another, or some people's kids versus others.
First off, watch out for that train. That train, I'm afraid that train may have been sent by the governor. Watch out for that train.
You're so funny. Yeah, it's loud. It sure is. But in any event, this has become such a political thing when it shouldn't be. You know, what this bill does is provide parity to every single school district across the state. And, you know, I'm still here in central Illinois, I should say.
Right.
I was in Gillespie last night and met with three different superintendents, all of whom represent central Illinois. It's, you know, very far from, they're not going to be defenders of Chicago. Yet they were saying this bill, we've been working on it for 4 years. This is not a bill that was crafted even by politicians. It's a bill that was crafted by educators who have dedicated their life to educating kids, right? And they just want to be able to make sure that every school district gets treated the same way, that, you know, theirs isn't on a more advantageous level than a district up north. And this is about fairness.
Well, but that's what we were just talking about. That's, you know, we were just talking about this. But we're both on.
I'm going to say he shouldn't veto it. He should sign it.
Yeah, but I understand you feel that way, but we both know he's going to. My point is, let's get on with the process. This is the same nonsense that just went on in Congress with the health care bill. Move the ball. Move it along because school's coming.
I think we agree. We agree with that.
All right. Now, here's the other question, though, I have for you. I want to give you as much time as possible, but I have to get a bunch of questions in here. Here's the other question I have for you. Has any Democrat in leadership or related to leadership asked you to slow pay anything?
Oh, my God, no. No way. And if they did, I'd just tell them to go stick it. Of course not.
Okay.
My job is to make sure that I'm managing the state's finances as best as possible. And, look, nobody tells me what to do. Well, hold on. One person tells me what to do, and that's my mom. She's 81, and you would listen to her if she told you what to do. She's, you know, small but feisty.
I listen to all moms.
Where I get my feistiness from, but, you know, that's it. I'm here because the voters elected me to be here, and that's who I have to be accountable to.
I'm not questioning your integrity. I'm questioning their integrity. I'm asking if anyone reached out and asked you to, and I got your answer. Your answer is no. However, the politics of this, I don't understand your overall position with the politics of this. You've been incredibly critical of this governor, and you're certainly entitled to that opinion. But some of these quotes are pretty extreme. And I know he's taken shots at you as well. And I don't understand it on either end. The governor's not without fault in this. He definitely has fault in this process. But he wasn't the guy that's been there for the last 20 or 30 years leading up to this. He wasn't the guy in 96 when this whole pension thing kicked in. And he and Madigan seem to have made it personal. But it feels like it's personal between you and the governor. So are you the comptroller for the state of Illinois or for the Democrats?
I'm the comptroller for the state of Illinois. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked that, because if you could name one other Republican elected leader here in this state that I have critiqued, then I'll just shut up. But you can't, because my issue is not that I'm against Governor Rauner because I'm playing politics or I'm supporting Democrats. I have no problem with the fact that he's a Republican. That's not why I'm critiquing him. I'm critiquing him because he's, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, the worst governor that we've had in my lifetime. And those are some important words to be saying, because let me tell you, I led the impeachment efforts against my own governor, a Democrat, Governor Blagojevich. And, you know, don't take my word for it. Look up my record. You'll see my name front and center on the ability to create the panel to even impeach the governor. And I was very outspoken, and I had just as strong words about Rob Blagojevich as I do today for Governor Rauner. That's not my opinion. Look it up. You'll see my.
But Governor Blagojevich is sitting in prison, so I want to make sure I understand what you just said. You're telling me that Governor Rauner is a worse governor than Blagojevich was for the state of Illinois.
Yes, in terms of Governor Blagojevich did not rack up a $15 billion bill backlog and $800 million in late payment interest penalties. We never teetered on the brink of not allowing our school systems to open. As a matter of fact,
that's not true. That's not true. Now, listen.
Hold on a second here. Here's what's true, because I'm the controller and I can verify that, in fact, this will be the first time in at least the last 30 years, if not ever in the history of this state, that the state of Illinois controller will be unable to make general state aid payments to schools. That falls on this governor. And it's fair, because when he ran for governor, he critiqued Governor Quinn on his lack of leadership. And so what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
But is there anything?
And that's what they are.
But Comptroller, is there anything the Democrats could do better? Is there anything Mike Madigan could do? Is there anything John Cullerton could do? Is there anything the assembly on the Democrat side, the people that vastly control this state, is there anything they could do better? How is this all Rauner's fault?
No, this is not all Rauner's fault. Let me be clear about that again. And I've said this on many occasions. The governor did not create the problems that existed when he took office. I can't blame a single one of them on him, right? He was just a regular citizen. But the minute he got elected, it was his job to lead the state and help fix the problems that he promised he was going to fix. Instead of what was a $5 billion backlog that should have been paid down, we have a $15 billion backlog, a 200% increase under his tenure. Deficit spending by a fiscal conservative of $7.2 billion a year more than we had coming in. How is that fiscally responsible? That wasn't Governor Quinn. It wasn't Mike Madigan or John Cullerton. That was the governor and his state agencies that he controls. So, you know, he has to take responsibility for what's happened under his watch. And I think that the Democrats can absolutely do a lot of things better, and we need to. We're going to need to deal with issues of reform. That's, you know, the situation that we're in right now is unsustainable. But the relationships that exist at this moment are so toxic that any thought that we can negotiate on things of serious reform is just out the window at this point.
Okay, but how are you making – but Susanna, how are you making it less toxic when you say things like – and these are your words, not mine. When you say things like the Michelangelo quote, if creating havoc for the state of Illinois was a form of art, Governor Bruce Rauner would be Michelangelo. How does that help?
Well, I just think I'm being truthful about what's happening in the state.
But you just said
the most important bill.
Let me make the point, please.
In 30 years.
the point is, you just said you're the comptroller for the state of Illinois. Somebody's got to be the grown-up in the room. Shouldn't you be the person that's not shooting at the governor? Shouldn't you take the higher road?
I guess I'm going to defend myself, though. You know, when his education secretary, per his direction, goes on your show and makes a wildly false allegation, then, yeah, I think he is creating havoc. Maybe you should start with the governor leading and acting like the adult that he's supposed to be, right? So I'm not going to sit there and allow them to just make up misinformation and spread it to the public as if it were true.
So you think,
Judy Martipinka, let me just say this. Judy Martipinka,
I have a question.
A great one. She criticized Governor Blagojevich when he made, you know, crazy decisions on behalf of the state that would impact our finances. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing it. I'm calling him out for it. I know he doesn't like it. But if he just did his job, maybe I would be a great cheerleader for the governor.
Dan Hines, Judy Martipinka, and even your predecessor, because Munger did it on this show, called out both sides. I've never heard you call out the Democrats until today. Not one time.
Well, I just did. Well, you know, again, in all fairness, I had never really truly been invited to your show.
That's absolutely not true. No, then you need to talk to your people. Now, that's, well, listen, you think Beth Purvis was not telling the truth. Your people aren't telling you the truth. You've been invited on this show. You've been invited on this show with regularity, and you're invited back. And again, I thank you for coming on because this access is important for people to hear. All I'm saying to you as a taxpaying citizen for Illinois, not as a talk show host, think about the words you're using as well. The governor, and I've said this to the governor, I'll say it to him again. The governor, your office, Madigan's office, everybody needs to grow up and think about the people of this state and do the right thing, because this pissing contest that goes on isn't helping anybody.
Well, I think that's good advice, Steve. I do. I so want you to know that from my perspective, I am not going to be, and I don't think I was elected to be, just some bureaucrat that sits behind the desk and keeps quiet while the state is crumbling around us. I'm going to speak up about that, and I'm going to use the language that I feel is necessary to make sure that people are paying attention to what's happening to their state. And some people are going to like that, and some people are going to hate it. But at the end of the day, I know that my commitment is to try to be the best controller that the state's ever had, so that I can be the truth-telling fiscal watchdog of what's happening. That's what I said I'd do in the campaign. It's exactly what I'm doing right now. And I know it ruffles some feathers, but at least I'm being truthful with the people, and I'm not going to go on your show and make up some phony baloney allegation that she could immediately just discount by communicating. You know, it's a two-way street. Communication is a two-way street.
I agree with that, and I appreciate your honesty, and I appreciate you coming on. So let's do this again, and let's keep the conversation going, and I appreciate you listening to the advice. But thank you for coming on.
Hey, by the way, Steve, before you hang up on me, I
would never hang up on you.
Thank you. Well, just because you have other more important things to do. But one of my best friends, Andy Hansen, is like an avid listener of yours. And mm-hmm. for years, he's been, hey, you should go to see Akron Show. But in any event, in case he's listening, hey, buddy.
All right. Well done on the shout out. That was very well done, I have to say. She slipped that in nicely.